Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for May the 7th, 2021. This is episode number 57. Our top stories today, Rivian preparing to launch a summer tour, GM makes a military-grade electric pickup, Tesla massive demand means it's sold out for the next 90 days. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs forum moderator and Inside EVs editor. Joining us today is Tom Logney, Inside EVs editor and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge with Tom Logney. We also have Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, available on all your usual podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from Out of Spec Studios. He also puts together scrumptilicious videos for the Inside EVs YouTube channel. Please subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. Okay, so welcome, gentlemen of the panel and ladies and gentlemen of the audience. Let's kick it off by talking about what's charging up in our driveways this week. Kyle, I understand you have a Volvo XC60 T8 inscription.
Oh, it's been nice. Well, it just got here yesterday. And So had a whole bunch of cars this week, actually. I think we had six or seven on test. But this was the only one with a plug. Very nice car, inscription, XC60. All the same things that I've said about Volvos over the past applies here. It's the right size, best sound system in the world, and great electric driving. I will say I've noticed an odd intricacy about these Volvo plug-in hybrids, and that is that if you try and drive it in all-electric mode on the highway, they overheat, and they cannot sustain they can do like 72 miles an hour wide open on the highway, but it backs down the power on you. And it's one of the few plug-in hybrids. I've noticed it in the XC90, the XC60, and the V60 Polestar now. I've all driven in the last few months. And they just can't sustain highway speeds in electric mode. Unlike the BMW plug-in hybrids or the Toyota RAV4 Prime, which just like is a monster in electric mode.
Quite a clarity.
I mean, there's tons of others that are able to support highway driving, which I think is a little disappointing because driving around town, it's really nice. You can use the full accelerator pedal when you have it locked in electric mode, and it won't kick on the combustion engine. So, you know, you can floor it in EV mode, get all the electrons out of it that's possible before kicking on the combustion engine, which I think is a great feature. Every plug-in should have that. Some of them, like Porsche, actually have a little moving plastic bit on the underside of the accelerator pedal that give you how much you can push down given your state of charge and speed. It's really nice. And yeah, just a nice Volvo. I love them. I actually almost ordered this exact spec last year. I think Martin was involved in that one too with a friend's dealership. And literally it's two the same exact spec I almost got, denim blue with a blonde interior, XC60 T8 inscription, no massaging seats on this one. They're left at the factory. So can't spend too much time in it.
What's the inscription stand for?
Oh, that just means it's the nice one. It's got the fine grain leather. It's got all the good seats and things like this.
So driving in electric mode, how many miles around town do you get?
Yeah, well, I'm going to do the range test probably tomorrow in it before we leave on an adventure. Okay. But
70 mile an hour?
70 and the city. So plug-in hybrids, I do a under 40 mile per hour stop-and-go mixed driving. It's not as scientific, but I do still do a loop style test and try and end back to my starting point. And then we'll do a 70 mile per hour, or at least as close as we can get. I think if I start on flat ground with the Volvo and not accelerate up to highway speeds in the electric mode, it won't overheat it. So that's how I do plug-in hybrids anyway. I run the combustion engine till we're set at 70, and then I switch it to electric mode.
How many miles do you think you're going to get?
Yeah, so probably 25 in the city and 21 on the highway, because every Volvo has been the same.
Right, okay.
Though, regardless of the shape, they all go the same distance in our test.
And also, I understand you also have some zero DSRs showing up?
We got a bunch of zeros. The driveway is going to be full of them by this afternoon because we are taking a few on a trek this weekend. I should say not just this weekend, this entire week off-grid. So if anyone tries to contact me, we don't get back to you anyway, but we're really not going to get back to you now because we're going to be in the middle of Montana, off the grid, no cell connectivity, road tripping, a couple zero motorcycles, across the entire state of Montana, including, I don't know if you guys remember, but last year on this channel, we featured Brian from I1 Tesla's Model Y with a lift kit and off-road tires. We're meeting Brian in North Dakota, and he'll be joining us on the trip in his lifted Model Y to go across Montana.
Well, that'll be cool.
So, yeah, tomorrow afternoon, we'll be in like, or Sunday afternoon, we'll be in like Williston, North Dakota.
You need to race some off-road.
Only electric vehicle there.
You need to race some off-road, like a true, like not even a dirt road, like off the road. Like, I don't know what kind of, but I don't know if there's desert sand or what the conditions would be like, but you know, that would look cool.
Probably going to be pretty rocky
okay.
and dirt and lots of grizzly bears to dodge.
Okay.
And what's the bikes you're on?
So we'll be on the Zero DSR Black Forest. It's the BF one.
That one.
Two to the right. Yeah, you got it.
It's over two more. There's a BF. So DSR BF one.
Oh, that one.
There you go. So it's got the bags on it.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
It's like style.
Ewan McGregor on Long Way Up. You're going to look like a proper off-roader. That's going to be cool.
Right. So it's our first special road trip of the year for Out of Spec Motoring. We really wanted to go on more, you know, sort of creative adventures. And the idea here is to take electric motorcycles on a long distance trip, which is tough. No DC fast charging, only 14 kilowatt hours, no charging infrastructure where we're going. There's no Tesla infrastructure, no J1772 infrastructure. It's really worst case scenario. It's going to be campgrounds. We'll probably bring a generator as a backup, or we'll just put them in the van. We have a little support van that we rented. And it's going to be awesome, I think, at least.
Zero's really doing pretty well. They've just had their 15th anniversary like a week or two ago.
Yeah, Zero's kicking it up big time this year. Yeah, they're really kicking it up.
They used to be like just like glorified mountain bikes at one point.
So I think we're going to see some big things from them soon.
Yeah?
Yeah, I don't know what they are, but they're hyping it.
Okay, you hear something in the background, some chatter?
Yeah, I hear some chatter. They're like, hey, you know, we just want you to get comfortable on these bikes because, you know, something might be coming. So we'll see. We'll see. Well,
but if you go over to their like their SRF bike, that's really nice.
The Zero S.
Right, so the SRF and the SRS are the same.
It's a nightmare website. It won't go left. Anyway, carry on. I can't work the website.
The bikes don't have reverse.
that one. So that platform, I would imagine they're going to maybe have an off-road version of something on this platform maybe? Because this is like the new bike platform and the DSR is not the old one.
It's possible. So the SRF and SRS are the same bike. Right. Martin's really struggling over there.
Come on, Martin. You're supposed to be a pro at this.
Just refresh.
I'm taking the website off. I can't work it. I'm taking my toys home and I'm sulking.
So if you're curious about the SRS, we already have tons of videos live across all of our channels and Inside EVs from last year where we did I think we rode it for 3 months. We basically rode it everywhere, put as many miles on it as we could, stress tested it, had nice pro bike. Riders rip it around the track in North Carolina. Man, did that thing just perform flawlessly. That was a monster of a bike.
Right.
Stupidly fast. I mean, you pull out of your driveway and you go, oh, I'm doing 130 miles an hour. I had no idea. Let me slow down and put a jacket on. So it's one of those like just insano bikes that I shouldn't ride because when I get on a motorcycle, my brain turns off. So just awesomely fun.
Right on. All right, hey, Tom, how you doing?
I'm over here. What's up? I'm not planning anything nearly as exciting as what Kyle's doing. I'm the boring guy. So, you know, you guys could check out for a minute if you think that we're going to be talking about awesome road trips. That unfortunately ain't happening here in Jersey.
So this past week, I believe we did a Tesla Model 3 70 mile an hour range test, and we talked about a little bit last week, but the post went up and there was a lot of chatter about that. There's a lot of comments. So you got like 305 miles, but then went 5 miles past the zero mark and people want to know how much farther we could go. And you had planned to go until dead, but then that didn't quite work out. So just tell us about that and your secret weapon for doing these range tests.
Yeah. So, you know, doing these range tests, it's difficult because you have to time when you're going to be arriving at the DC fast charger as close as you can to when the vehicle is going to run out of juice, you know, and it's not easy. I'm during the tests, the range is constantly adjusting. So I'm figuring, okay, if I do one more loop here, I can just about end up at this DC fast charger or this supercharger. So to make a long story short, I hit zero at 305 miles, and I was still 5 miles from the supercharger. And I was able to continue those 5 miles just fine and arrived and plugged in. So we ended the test at 310 miles. State of charge was zero. It was freaking out. It was telling me I'm at negative battery and all this stuff. So, you know, we ended the test. But the goal, as you mentioned, was I had planned on driving it to till it stopped. And the way I'm going to do that is there's this new company that just came out called Spark Charge. We wrote about them a few times. They actually were on Shark Tank and got $1 million investment from Mark Cuban and Laura Grenier maybe eight or 9 months ago. And yeah, they had to give each one of them, I think, 7% stake in the company and a seat on the advisory board. So the thing is that they're just rolling out the product, and I'm the first person that received it. All the serial numbers on the modules and everything were 0002. So, like, you know, they have one of these units back home and then one for me. And I'm going to be beta testing it, you know, I'm going to be doing a bunch of videos with it. But for the range tests, it's perfect because I'll have a support vehicle follow me. Well, not the whole time. Maybe, you know, when I'm 3/4 of the way done, I'll call them up and say, look, I'm going to be on the turnpike now. Meet me at this rest stop area. We'll meet up. And then maybe the last 10 or 15 miles, they'll follow me. So I can literally drive the cars now until at 70 miles an hour until they just roll to a stop. Hopefully it won't be at a inopportune area or bad place on the turnpike. You know, this is a work in progress. In any event, I got the stuff all delivered in crates and everything, but I wasn't able to get it all up and working before I did that range test. So the next range test I do, hopefully I'm going to be using it. I have it all unpacked now. I put it together. I have it in my garage. But one of the things that I really wanted to talk about when we talk about the Spark Truck is just the fact that these type of mobile car charging equipment is going to be a big business. Look at Kyle. He's going on this trip now. What's your biggest problem, Kyle? You can't recharge the damn things. You know,
that been an issue this entire time? We had companies left and right promise us, oh, you can tow our giant battery pack. Oh, wait, it doesn't do J1772. It's just DC. Oh, we'll get you these two big battery packs. Never heard back. And then it's like, oh, yeah, sorry, we'll get them to you. Still never heard back. Just insane. The level of quality of business in mobile car charging and the lack of follow through I've seen across the board.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of companies trying to figure this out. I mean, we did an article on Blink last year where Blink has this portable generator. It's a gasoline generator. Right, yeah. And it has its uses because it has a 9-hour runtime. It has a 10 or 11-gallon gas tank, and it provides 10 kilowatts. It's a 40-amp charger. Now, it's not for all the uses, like, you know, you'd really want a DC fast charger to really quickly refuel, but there would be uses for this thing also. Do I like the fact that it's burning gas to charge an EV? No, I don't. But you know what? We're not there yet where all of the mobile charging equipment would be. I mean, Kyle, if you could throw this thing in the back of your van, it would probably suit you guys just fine on this.
We're bringing one that does pretty much the same thing as a backup.
There you go. So what I'm getting at is there's going to be a market with this. And as electrification advances, proliferates, more and more people are driving these cars, more and more people are going to need some type of a mobile recharging solution. So enter Spark Charge. It's this modular system that they have where you stack batteries on top of each other. They kind of snap into each other. Each battery module is 3.5 kilowatt hours. And then you have the charging equipment on top. It's a DC fast charger, can deliver 20 kilowatts. You can stack up to 4 units. Now, there it is in my garage. I literally just put it together. And it's a CHAdeMO unit. They're coming out with their CCS version in a few months. But they made the CHAdeMO unit first, not really because they love the Nissan Leaf, which I'm not saying they don't love the Nissan Leaf, but because then they could use a CHAdeMO adapter for Tesla vehicles. And let's face it, you know, 80 or 85% of the electric vehicles on the road today in the US are Teslas. So, hey, you know, you got to make the product that can be used first. Now, you can see there's two battery modules. Each one of those are 3.5 kilowatt hours, and they just snap on top of each other. Now, they each weigh 65 pounds. Mm. So what you're looking at there weighs 150 pounds. And me with my bad back, you know, you see I put it on a dolly. It's right. not the best, you know, mobile solution for me. I mean, it wouldn't be something that you'd be lifting in and out of your trunk all the time is what I'm saying. This isn't really a consumer product where you would buy because you have an electric vehicle and you'd want to charge it, you know, on the road. This would be for roadside assistant, fleet management. SparkCharge tells me that they're getting a lot of racetracks calling them and saying they'd like to buy these units. Apartment buildings and condo associations saying, we'd like to have one of these available for our tenants. So, I mean, that's some of the use cases that this thing has. I haven't really used it too much yet because I'm just kind of putting it together. And as I said, I'm beta testing it. So there's still a couple little glitches going on there. Like you could see in the upper right-hand corner of the screen, there's a battery module there that threw a fault. So I had three battery modules, but now I only have two. Okay. And so, you know, it's a work in progress, but I love this product. I think some things like this are going to definitely have their uses and, you know, roadside assistance, AAA, you know, you could literally call AAA when you know you're not going to make your destination. You don't have to wait until you run out. You can call them up on your cell phone and say, look, meet me at the Starbucks on Route 78. You know, it's a mile away. I need a charge. And what you do is, you know, you'd call them or you'd use SparkCharge is coming out with, it's called the Boost EV app. And that app is going to link to people in the area that have mobile roadie systems. It's called the roadie system. And it won't be limited to like a AAA. Like they're thinking of all different use cases for this. They might even have Uber drivers that have them.
Sure.
Because they're out there driving around all the time. And, you realize you're going to run out. You're a little Spark EV, Dom. You know, it's got terrible range. And, you know, you can't make it home. And, you know, you pull into a Starbucks. You pull out your Boost EV app. And you say, you know, here, I'm here. I need a charge. You go into the Starbucks. You're sitting there having coffee. The guy pulls up. He plugs in. You'll get about a mile a minute. Of range, and each module will, you know, recover somewhere around 15 miles of range, which the goal of this thing is basically just to get you to a DC fast charger or to get you home. And, you know, I think it's a great unit. It's rough. It's still new. But I think things like this, these mobile recharging units, they're going to be huge business in the upcoming years.
All right. Can I ask a couple questions? I got a couple questions for you. First off, I reached out to this company last year, almost 1 year ago, before we went on our summer road trip. And they said, oh, we can probably send you a unit for your trip. Great. So now here we are 12 months later. Tom is just getting his first media unit. The first one, a year after they said we could probably support your trip. And it's got faults. So what's the likelihood that this is going to make it to production anytime soon? It sounds like there's some serious issues here, Tom.
Well, you know, it's being produced in low volume and being beta tested. So they've got financing. We know they have cash. And that, you know, cash can solve a lot of ills, Kyle. A lot of these small startups that start these projects, the reason why they never make it to production is because they run out of money.
Sure.
From what I understand, SparkCharge is well funded, not just, you know, Mark Cuban and Laura Grenier of Shark Tank. They've got very good funding, and this is one of the reasons why I think it took long is because they had a system made last year that they were going to go to market with, and they found problems with it that they didn't believe were correctable, or it would have been too much to correct. So they kind of redesigned the whole thing. And this roadie system is the second generation of the system. And so I think that's why they had a little bit of a stumbling from the beginning. Their original system that they had never actually made it out. They redesigned it. They lose the lessons learned, and they came out with this new roadie system. So let's see. I'm like the first person to use it. I don't even know the pricing, to be honest with you. It's many thousands of dollars. Well, that's going to make or break it.
Yeah, well, because the thing you could just get a diesel generator with a DC fast charger, 24 kilowatt CCS on there. And if that happens to be cheaper That's what everyone's going to go with. If this is cheaper, no one's going to say, I'm going to carry around limited capacity that costs more just so it appears that I'm trendy and green. Maybe some people. But it needs to be better than a diesel generator with a CCS or CHAdeMO DC fast charger on it.
Well, it would be quieter, and you'll be able to use it in a lot more different places, like indoors, in garages.
AAA doesn't care. Where a car can go, you can hear an engine. Diesel generators are quiet now. Same with gas ones. You could start that puppy up, plug in a car, you're good to go. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. I think I'm soured by the whole, yes, we're almost ready 1 year ago, and now we're still have faults.
That's like the typical startup kind of thing. You know, you promise now and then figure out how to deliver later, you know?
It's the easiest way to get money. Look at this amazing product that can make the world move backwards. And then, oh yeah, we still haven't designed it yet. And it doesn't work. So we've seen this a million times over. It's just getting to me.
I will say one thing too. They have another business model that isn't just this roadside assistance. I ran out of energy. Come save me.
Yeah.
That, you know, they haven't released yet, that I think is really interesting.
Okay.
Can't really talk about it, but they have another business model, another use case for this that I'm excited about it. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's cool.
Nobody's even, from what I even understand, nobody's even mentioned what they're trying to plan. We'll see how that progresses.
On this topic of roadside EV charging, on the larger scale, I was over at Lightning eMotors the other day, which is that company that produced that electric transit that we tested for a little while. Yeah. Really cool company, local here to Colorado, down the street. They have a trailer that we were originally thinking about taking on our Montana trip for our bikes. That is a 200 kilowatt hour battery pack baked into a trailer that you can tow behind a pickup truck, or they have one design that fits inside one of their electric vans. It can DC fast charge, I think, at 150 kilowatts to charge the battery all the way up. And then it can output, I think, again, about 150 kilowatts, something like this. And I just think that's a great idea for mobile roadside charging of like trucks and buses, similar to Spark Charge. This one you just need to put on a trailer, obviously. A trailer weighs like 10,000 pounds, so you need a heavy duty truck to tow it. But cool idea. I asked them to adapt it to AC, but they didn't have enough time for our trip.
I mean, just think, if this model works for them, if the roadie system works and, you know, they get everything going, they could change it. They could make it this giant unit that charges faster.
Oh yeah.
You know, I'm just saying for buses or whatever, you know, I mean, there's a lot of things they can do with this.
Oh yeah. There's a lot of headroom.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think this is the proof of concept. This is their first model. They need to see that it works, and there's a lot of directions they can take this in. That's really all I can say.
So I think a dedicated solution is better than what people are talking about in the comments, which is, what about when more vehicles are on the road which have vehicle to load, like the new Ioniq from Hyundai and the Kia EV6. And yeah, sure, you can get energy out of those cars, but I think about 3.5 kilowatts peak. So yeah, you can technically charge an EV from that EV, but then you're using the energy in that vehicle. So if you're talking about roadside recovery and things like that, I think it's a bit like home storage. You know, Tesla will argue, rather than using your car to power your house, install a proper battery, do it with breakers, do it with the right installation into your main board, and do it with a home system. I think that's the solution with roadside charging, is make it a dedicated unit, a trailer, something like that, rather than thinking, well, in this utopian future, we're going to have vehicles that can charge other vehicles. That seems like an emergency situation to me, rather than a permanent situation.
Absolutely, Martin. What if you're where you don't, like, you're on a road trip, you know, you're 100, 200 miles from home. Who are you going to call to come? Like, you don't, like, maybe if you're around your where you live, you can say, hey, Martin, could you come over and you know, I'm out here on the road. Could you give me a quick jump? Sure, I'm not doing nothing. But when you're far from home, you don't know where anybody is. You can't rely on another friendly EV owner to just drive by and say, oh, sure, I'll give you a charge. You know, you'd pull out your app and say, look, I need a little help here. And hopefully within 10 or 15 minutes. Away.
Yep. True. Yeah.
So, Tom, so you have another range test coming up. So when you do that one, And tell us about that if you want to in a second. But if when you do that one, so are you going to take like this whole, all these battery things, these two units, and like put them in the back of that vehicle? Is that how you're going to do it?
Yeah, no, okay. I wouldn't, because then it would be lugging around 150 pounds and it would like affect the range test. Right. Yeah, exactly. So no, I'm hoping to do it with a Model Y soon. The problem is I have a friend who just got a Model Y like 2 months ago, and 2 weeks ago, he's sitting at a red light and somebody just rear ends him, just drives right into him. So we had it all set. We were going to do it, but now the back of the car's all smashed. So he's got to get that fixed first. Once that's out of service, we're going to take it out. And what I'll do is I'll be in my pickup truck, and I'll meet him at a certain point once he's at, or I'll drive his car. One way or the other is basically towards the very end, when there's less than 20 miles to go, the truck will meet him and follow the car and put our hazards on when that thing, when he's like, okay, I'm losing power. You know, I'll be behind him with the truck with the hazards on, as following him, pull off the road. And then we'll set up the cameras. You'll see me getting out of the truck, carrying these 65 pound modules over, and probably like, oh, you see my back.
I need a dolly.
No, I'll have a dolly. Yeah. I'm not going to carry them over, but yeah, you know, it'll, it should be the first time we do it. It should look pretty comical, but we'll see.
So when you're driving, so like in this, I had this question last week, actually, when you're driving the Model 3 and you get down to 305 miles, is it slowing down at that point? I think Elon Musk said it's got like 20 miles or around 20 miles after it hits the zero mark, but I don't know if that's
every car's different.
Is it turtle?
Nope, it didn't turtle. It has less power. If you were to step on it, you know, you're not going to get that same response. Right. But it doesn't.
You can still go 70 miles an hour though.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, that's the thing. When if I cannot go 70 miles an hour, I'm done. I try to maintain that for the whole trip, at least. Well, you know, we say the whole trip, but we make turns because we drive in loops. So, you know, there's times we're getting off the highway and, 99% of the time we're at, 70 miles an hour. But, unless we're on a track, it's not perfect. But, when we do this, when we use the spark charge to recharge it, when the vehicle can no longer maintain 70 miles an hour, it's done. You know, we pull over and do it. Yeah. Because it's a 70 mile an hour trip.
Right. Wow.
And plenty of people who drive Teslas have run out of energy when the dashboard says more than zero.
Yeah. All about BMS calibration. If you are hard on it, especially when towing a trailer, Teslas will run out with 4, 5, 6, 7% still remaining on the dash. Mm-hmm. It's just a guesstimation as to pack voltage. And if you're constantly draining pack voltage, you'll essentially just hit the bottom bricking point. It shuts off. You're dead. So it happens a ton up here in the mountains in Colorado. I think just a couple of weeks ago when I was driving the Mustang back in, two Kia Niro lifts died on the climb up the hill. You know, you gain like 4,000 feet of elevation and you're just like pulling all the pack voltage down. And, they have passengers in the car that are like, here's my first experience in EVs, and it's dying. And this is why I'm not as optimistic that EVs work for every use case. And I think here... for rideshare EVs, if it's a long distance trip, you need to let the driver know that it's like, hey, we're going up either in elevation or distance. And right now, I think they just say if it's more than 45 minutes, one of the driver was saying. So that's a tough one.
They need to take elevation into account for sure when it, predictive, right?
Trips. Yeah, but that's too much integration for most people to handle, these days. Mm. So, yeah.
All right.
And also, Dom, one last thing I want to mention. Sure. Really quickly, I know we put it in the post, but I can't say it enough. You know, people get so heated over the range tests. Like, you didn't do this, you didn't do that. Listen, every range test is going to come. I could do my same car and take it on the highway 5 times, and I'm going to get slightly different results each time. Right. We don't do controlled, where we're on a track where we know exactly.
We can't run the racetrack.
Yeah. We do these range tests to give people a relatively good idea of what they can expect if they were to drive in the approximately the same conditions. When Kyle does his test and I do my test, we're on different roads. The elevation change is slightly different, even slightly different makes a difference. If there's 5 mile an hour wind when I'm driving, but he does it and there's 10 miles an hour wind, that's going to affect it. So, don't get so, people just want to fight over you. No, you should have called it at 305, or you should call you should say 315 instead of 310.
It
really doesn't matter. We're not trying to do a scientific test to say this is definitively the range of this vehicle. We're just trying to give people an idea of what they could expect if they drive in similar conditions. And you know what? A car with 5,000 miles is going to be different than a car with 15,000 miles. There's been more battery degradation. I mean, there's the BMS calibration, like Kyle said. There's so many things that are involved. Please don't get so hung up on our results that, like, to fight us over 3 or 4 miles. It's really useless to argue over that.
And we're not trying to replace like the EPA numbers at all. Right. We're just like, this is a supplemental piece of information that can help you if you're on a road trip. You know, generally, so if we say that you can go 305 miles in your Tesla Model 3 or whatever, you know, maybe think about charging at 250 miles so you have lots of buffer. Or I don't know, Kyle, you're the road trip master. You'd maybe like 285 miles or something.
I don't use miles. Miles are just wrong.
Okay.
Because you can never match them.
Okay.
Yeah.
What do you use?
Oh, just percentage.
Okay.
So my Model 3 performance, just the, you know, just driving normally, gets about 200 miles on a charge, maybe 210 if I really stretch it, sometimes less. And that's just cruising 75, 80 down the highway, not driving like my style. Mm-hmm. I do have the little roof crossbars on it though. So I just put it in percent and I double the percent. And so if it says I have 80%, I know I can go 160 miles because that would be 200 miles at 100%.
Right.
My car also, you know, almost 90,000 miles now. It's did great.
Wow.
Right. All right. So let's move on. So there were no big auto shows or big reveals this week, but we did hear about one prototype making a debut of sorts. So GM Defense held an event on the occasion of it opening up a manufacturing facility in North Carolina to produce an infantry squad vehicle, an ISV. They held a little ride and drive for some politicians and the press. And most of the examples they had on hand were much like the ones that they plan on building, like all diesel powered and actually kind of noisy. They did, however, have a single electric version of it there, but it wasn't even mentioned in the press release. They call it the all electric military concept. It's literally a concept vehicle. They weren't asked by the military to build it or anything. They just kind of did it to show that the army, show the army what they were capable of in a shorter period of time. So this thing is basically the same as the ones they will be making for the army. It's built on the frame of the Chevy Colorado ZR2, but with an E-Crate electric powertrain. So basically that's the same components in the Chevy Bolt EV. So it has 200 horsepower, 266 pound-feet of torque, 66 kilowatt-hour battery. The electric motor is up front, but it's rear-wheel drive with four-wheel drive capability. So I believe it has the same drivetrain as the diesel ones. Range estimates they were giving were pretty wide ranging, from like 70 miles to 150 miles. About 90% of the vehicle is made from off-the-shelf parts. So this particular vehicle is a pickup truck version of the ISV and seats 5. I think they have other versions that seat like 9 people. So apparently they took it off-road at the Charlotte Motor Speedway Rock City Campground on Monday, and it performed exceptionally well, they say. And it did the same course as the other ISVs, which included a steep, muddy, and rocky hill climb. So now I'm looking at this thing, and I'm thinking how successful civilian versions of military vehicles have been in the past. Think like the Jeep, of course, and the G-Wagon. So I'm wondering how hard would it be to commercialize something like this, and maybe using like the Ultium architecture. So Kyle,
it's got to win a couple wars before it does that. The reason that Humvees are so popular and G-Wagons are so popular is because for at least 20 or 30 years before they went on sale to civilians, we saw machine gun fire coming out of them, troops getting out, you know, very patriotic for either Germany or us, you know, whichever way you look at it. But, you know, there's some emotional connection to wartime and fighting. I look at this and I go, where are the bulletproof doors? Where's the bulletproof glass? Why is it only a single motor? How is this going to win any wars? It's really cool.
I mean, it's not really for battlefront.
That's why it's not going to be popular in civilian culture. It's got to win wars on the battlefront. It's got to do something. That's why those vehicles were so popular. This is like, we made something for the military. Cool. Well, the military eats Cheetos. So if you buy a Cheetos off the rack at a grocery store, well, now you're, you know, tactical Cheeto eater. You know, this isn't... I don't think this will be commercialized to
right, no, I don't think it will be either, but I'm looking at it though, and yeah, I really like the, like this bare bones thing, and it's like, oh, just so
that'd
raw.
Be a great safari truck.
It'd super really basic, cool. You know.
But you know what would be even cooler than this? About a 6-inch lift and then pull the doors off my smart car. I bet it would be tougher than this thing.
So, hey, well, when you next time you're cool in North Carolina, do you know when you're in North Carolina next?
Oh, yeah. We pop in all the time.
Because I bet you they would let you drive this. I mean, they just have it sitting there, right?
I don't know. We should definitely try to do that. Yeah.
I mean, so, sounds like they let GM Authority have it. And I think they're going to be putting out a video at some point, and they haven't yet with it.
We should take it over to the track and we'll do a one lap. In the GM ISV EV.
That would
and
be awesome.
Then then we'll take it on the off-road course. We can shoot some guns out of it too, which would be a blast. We'll have some machine gun fire on the front range. We'll just make sure everyone's out of the way.
Sure.
And my point, I'd like to comment on this. To me, the story isn't this, the vehicle. It's okay. The E-Crate. It's GM's E-Crate and that they're continuing to work on this. Listen, I am so psyched about the E-Crate. I hope that GM commercializes it, makes it available. I can't tell you how many people have approached me in the last 10 years writing about EVs and you know, living with them that have said, I want to convert. Where do I get, like, is there like an off-the-shelf kit, full conversion? Right. GM will sell the hell out of these things if they really produce a cool, you know, complete kit that people can convert their cars in. I've been waiting. I know there's a few manufacturers out there. I know people that have used them and bought the conversion kits and so forth. And so with mixed reviews on their success. But right. You know, if GM puts something out like this, it's not a little startup, the thing will work. And I so hope that they put these things out, because I'm telling you, there is an enormous market. GM, please make these and sell them. There are so many people that want to convert their old cars to electric.
Totally agree. You know, everyone LS swaps their cars for crate motors. You can now buy a Hellefant crate motor, which is, I think, a 900 horsepower Hellcat motor in just a box with all the supporting hardware that you need. You can run it on an engine stand. Same exact thing for EVs work. The problem, I think, will be how do you arrange the batteries? So for weight distribution and proper driving dynamics, if it's a cruiser, just you're going to take it to Cars and Coffee, you're converting an old Beetle, that's fine. But we're talking about adding so much weight to an old school combustion engine with probably old school suspension that probably isn't designed to handle the weight, especially with all the weight going in the wrong places. So I think that's the biggest challenge for an EV conversion is you can make it electric, you can make it drive, but how do you make it drive well? And there's still a group of people who don't care how their car drives. They just want it to look nice and drive it around. I think Icon Vehicle Dynamics does a really good job. Of course, EV West. We actually are going to start doing some projects with them here pretty soon. They invited us out. So we got to go over there next time I'm in California and see if we can make some videos driving their cars, which would be really cool. And so
there's
lots of
EV West
lots
there
cool
on the
stuff.
Screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're going to go see Michael Perry?
Yeah, that's the plan.
Okay. All right.
We don't have any plans beyond that. I just said, you know, he invited us over. He said, come make some videos with us. What we wanted to do was to have them bring an electric Beetle out or one of their other electrified Volkswagens for the ID4 cross country trip that Volkswagen was doing that I joined for the Southwest portion. Yeah. I wanted to be like ID4 and classic Beetle. So
yeah.
we couldn't work out the logistics for that, but we did have a cool Myers Manx come, but that was combustion engine. And so we said, oh yeah, we'll revisit this one in the future.
Yeah, they do. They have like really good conversion kits for like Volkswagen products, like old Beetles and buses and things, or old Porsches, like that HP EVs. They have a few different motors and controllers that they've put on. You know, they've been doing conversions for a number of years now, but still the batteries. It's usually a mix of like Tesla modules and different things. So having like a Bolt EV battery, or even better, I think the next generation Ultium sort of battery to plug all that stuff into. It'd be super nice.
Really cool. And you know, the thing is, and I think this is an important topic, and I really want to start covering conversion EVs more because there's so many wildly different ways that you can do it.
Yeah.
there are so many cars that you would never consider converting to EV. These are your specialty pieces, you know, where the engine was the masterpiece. Think classic V12 Ferrari. You would never replace that engine and put an electric version in there because that's the center point of the car. If you do, that's sacrilege. But there are plenty of cars like the Beetle, like the classic Mini, that aren't known for their powertrain. It was a happy, fun car. It was a car that as either a replica, like Speedster replicas, Cobra replicas. These are things where people want to admire the beauty of the shell, the idea of what the original would be. And then having that electric, I think, just makes it even better in a sense, because now it gives it more of a story. So in some hands, these conversions can totally ruin a car, or they can totally up the value of one. Just depends on the car that you're doing.
I always like those Porsche 356 replicas that EVTV started out doing.
Right. Yeah. EVTV started those, what, like 15 years ago now?
Yeah. Some time ago, man. I would love to have it. And you could make it so it's designed to take the battery, put it in the bottom. Yeah. I have a pickup
right before Jack passed away, unfortunately. Sad to see him go. Jack Ricard, cool dude, very opinionated, you know, sort of a wild character. But I was with him, I don't know, maybe a week or two before he unfortunately passed. We were over at EVTV filming some things. And saw some of those 356s he had. They were really cool. He was trying to convert his wife's Escalade to electric for the longest time. That was still on the rack. And right. Like, it's just so funny how many projects. Man.
He did have it going at one point. It's just
but I saw they were running around in electric smarts, and still friends with a lot of the guys that are still there. They're awesome.
Right. So someone mentioned putting the battery in the back in the bed of a pickup truck. I have an old 88 Ford Ranger in my garage that I would like to convert at some point, and I always envisioned having the battery pack under the bed between the frame rails, you know, so it's like, you know, that deep of a battery pack, and you know, the length is as much as I can get in there and not interfere with it, like the powertrain, the drive shaft. The drive shaft comes up and there's a carrier thing, and
but if you put the electric motor just on the rear axle,
no, I would put it in the front and use my four-wheel drive.
Just
drive.
Use the existing I need transfer to case
for my case. If it was like an old pickup truck with just like a two-wheel drive or something, then I would try to put the motor on the back.
Yeah, well, you need four-wheel drive just to get up your driveway.
That's right.
I mean that not sarcastically. Your driveway is like a, you know, 100% slope. It's a 45 degree angle almost.
It's pretty special. It's a nice breakover when you come into the garage. All right. So let's move over on to, let's move on. Okay. So speaking of pickup trucks, deliveries of the Rivian R1T electric pickup truck are supposed to start next month in June. So if you're holding off ordering until you can drive one, you may be in luck. It appears as though the company will be holding a test drive tour over the summer and into fall. We don't have a lot of details yet, but given the large time frame, there is a good chance that there will be an event in your neck of the woods. And there should also be some events in Canada. We know this because of job postings on Rivian's career webpage. So currently, the company is in hiring mode with over 1,500 and some positions of all sorts that they need to fill. So if you're looking for a job and you need a job and you like EVs, check them out, man. They have the locations in different parts of the country. So some of these positions are for this four-month period during the summer and include event team managers, event demo drive specialists, and product specialists. So I don't know about you all, but I plan on going to one of these myself, actually. So how about you, Tom?
Oh, definitely. What I'm really looking forward to is I have a friend that's a really early reservation holder, and I think he's got notification that he's going to be a June delivery. So I might actually get to drive a delivered vehicle pretty soon. So
range test.
Definitely. I will take that for every second he will let me have it. I don't know how long I can pry it from his fingers, but I'm going to try to do everything I can with it. I'm so psyched about that vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah. I think we want to have some, like, there'll probably be some media. I think they want to get it to owners actually before they let the media really have it. I mean, we've seen it a few places, like the Blue Origin space capsule coming back to land. So Jeff Bezos had access to them. And we've seen some prototypes on the Long Way Up or whatever kind of trip from South America.
Yeah, and Emmy had it on the Rebel Rally.
That's true. Emmy had it on the Rebel Rally. So we've seen it, but we haven't really seen like the general, you know, auto media.
They're not very communicative with the media yet. So, you know, Dominic and I reached out to them and said, hey, here's all the stuff we want to do with it. I want to take one to Alaska. I want to do all this stuff. Make cool videos. And they said, oh, great. We'll get back to you.
Crickets. I think they're really focused on their customers, so that's, you know, that's good for customers.
Yeah, they're focused on deliveries, which is cool, and maybe we'll just take a delivered vehicle. But yeah, I would say for most vehicle launches, it's you know, a year ahead of launch. Hey, come on over, like we did with Mustang Mach-E. Experience it in the simulator. Be one of the first ones to ride in it. Go drive the car first, then go drive the next one, and then we'll start deliveries. And this is very much, it's seemingly the opposite. Let's get the cars out and then we'll have people report on it, which makes me think that maybe they're not as confident in their driving dynamics as we hope they are. But, well, you know, that's just, why wouldn't you want people to experience your truck early?
Oh, you're just trying to get them to give you one by saying that. All right.
I'm just saying it. You know, we really need to test this thing. Right. Actually, so I think from an emotional buy, I think this has the styling and the adventure spirit captured. I think from a technical ability, the Cybertruck seems to be really amazing in what Tesla is putting on paper for that vehicle. And then the Hummer EV, this will be the trio battle. That seems to just be all the batteries, all the power. Watts to freedom, baby. So, you know, that's going to be an interesting battle between the three. I'm excited to see who gets to do it first. It'll probably be a Top Gear or Motor Trend. We'll get to do that battle ahead of everyone. But that is going to be, I think, the new hot space is the adventure vehicle comparisons.
Super trucks. Basically super trucks.
Super trucks. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't know if the Rivian qualifies for super trucks.
Yeah, maybe it does. 3 seconds 0 to 60 is
3 seconds 0 to 60 is cool. Okay. It's pretty I take that back. Yeah, that's a super truck.
You get all three of those trucks out on the track or, you know, off-roading like that and produce a video and, you know, you're going to be counting views in the millions, not in the thousands.
Mm. Well, it just depends if we can be early to it. My guess is, you know, we're a relatively small outlet between Out of Spec and Inside EVs compared to some of the big ones. Inside EVs is not too small, but I don't think we'll be first to market for anything that is that good. So don't expect anything from us early on.
Right. Okay. So...
Oh, but, go ahead, Tom.
I'll say, but when you do get them, your content's going to be better than what the other guys do. Because it's going to be real and kind of crazy.
Well, yeah, the kind of crazy part, real, I don't know. I mean, we're just going to see how they do. But I'm very excited about this Rivian charging network. I was thinking about it the other day. I've been kind of pessimistic on adventure EVs and electric vehicles in general working over long distances in the middle of nowhere. And yeah, just a bit getting turned around on that slightly, thinking about where they're building out this network for Rivian vehicles. I think that could be the key here. Because I saw, you know, you saw Jeeps putting in these level 2 chargers that are solar powered at trailheads. I'm like, what's that going to do? Nothing. Literally nothing.
Right.
So that's just a marketing move.
Yes. So, okay, so let's move on to the next little thing here. So, as many of you probably know, there's a computer chip shortage affecting the auto industry. Some companies are being hit pretty hard. Ford, for example, is expected to have only half of its normal production for Q2, I believe, with the Ranger Super Duty trucks and the long-awaited Bronco being affected. General Motors has about 15,000 partially built trucks parked around different parts of the country. Over at Stellantis, which makes like Chrysler and Jeep in the U.S., production was down 11% in the first quarter, and they expect even a bigger hit in the second. At Tesla, things don't seem to be nearly so dire. It's found a way to work around this problem a bit by opting to use microcontrollers instead of the chips, and they've also developed firmware for new chips made by new suppliers. So I think this kind of underlines Tesla's software advantage and their ability to be nimble and adapt. But despite this upbeat report, we just heard last night that the Model S in all its guises and the Model X are being pushed back yet again. So the expected delivery dates on the Tesla website now are like Model S Plaid is August to September. We were expecting it like at the end of May, 1st of June. August to September. Model S Long Range, September to October. Model S Plaid is still Model S Plaid Plus, I mean, is still mid-2022. And Model X has been moved to January, February. So not even in 2021 this year. So, Martin, like some might think this is like a chip issue, but I kind of suspect it's related to the new battery and not getting a consistent enough quality yet to, you know, to build packs, you know, that they can depend on. We had another report this week that the production of the Model 3 and Model Y are sold out for the rest of this quarter.
Well,
so what say you?
Well, okay. So on microcontrollers, of which I, you know, I'm not going to pretend I'm an expert on, everyone on the internet seems to be an instant expert whenever a story comes out like this. We know that Tesla have a big team of people working at, it's up at Deer Creek Road in Palo Alto, where a lot of the engineers and the coders and people in those teams work from. So they have strength in depth in that. So in terms of pivoting from one microcontroller to another, I don't know how interchangeable they are, but we know they have the talent and resources to write the firmware for those. You know, from my idiot brain, I would then ask, does that create them a bit of an internal headache in the future as they have to then validate every version of software updates over the years? Like, oh, is that going to work with this one, this one, this one, this one? You know, like every time you launch a new iPhone, you've got to make sure it works with the old ones. Right. So maybe it causes some headaches, but you've got to carry on making cars, right? But then they equally haven't sold a single Model S and a Model X in the last 5 months, and they don't care. They're making more money from selling Bitcoin than they are making cars at the moment, so more power to them for buying, you know, buying the Bitcoin. They don't need S and X at all to be a good business. I like them selling the S and X because they are aspirational cars, and I think they should be in the lineup. Why they're not here yet is a real head-scratcher, because if you remember 3 months ago, Elon Musk said, we're going to start delivering, we know we're about a month away. And then we just heard, hey, we're about to start delivering. And then they go back and back. In January, he's like, oh, in a week's time, we're going to hold a special call and, you know, brief you guys all about the S and the X, the, you know, the Plaid. I'm really excited. That never happened. There is weirdness happening around the S and the X at the moment, and nobody really knows. Is it the chip shortage? Well, you know, it absolutely, you know, absolutely could be. They are not as impacted as others because they have their own custom chips in terms of their own hardware. So Hardware 3, you know, they design their own chips and they're made by Samsung. So they're not exactly going into the market like they were with NVIDIA previous to this and saying, you know, we need X many shipments, and NVIDIA say, well, we can't get that from our, you know, chip fab places. So to an extent, they're not, although they've still got to be made, don't get me wrong. So they're not exactly competing with any other EV maker for their main hardware. So I think they can carry on making those, the threes and the Ys, and they won't be as affected as others that are kind of going to the main pool. As for being sold out, you're absolutely right. This is a story that our friends over at Electrek published based on an unnamed single source, which was briefed into the staff, which was how the story went. So and a lot of stories begin like that and turn out to be true. But from that, every article I've read since goes back and quotes Fred over there. So it's like, I would just like more than one unnamed source. And just in terms of kind of journalistic standards, not that I'm doubting him, just like, and then last night there was like the Teslarati article, which was about the price rises. Like, we have more price rises on 3 and Y again.
Like, but, oh, how much?
$500. Like, oh, what's the time? Oh, it's time for a Tesla price rise. Another $500.
You know, it goes up and down. It's like it's like an elevator over there.
It's that time of the week. So, but again, like their headline was prices go up, but we're sold out. And it's like, well, that's different to, oh, we're going to make a reference to a single report that they're sold out versus, like, it just kind of becomes fact really quickly. And I don't know if it is. Like, if I go to the Tesla UK site, I can custom order a car for delivery this month. In Germany, I can custom order a, I was having a look at the design studio, a SR Plus or a Performance to arrive in May, or a Long Range to arrive in June. Here's what I think that report actually meant, and maybe I interpreted it wrong. I think their allocations are now spoken for this quarter. In other words, they say, we're going to make 1,000 white right-hand drive SR Pluses with the black interior and no tow bar. And we're going to put them in for a run for those 2 or 3 days. And then we'll ship them to the UK. I think they plot them in and go, right, now we're done. I think that is plausible. Those cars aren't sold yet. Now, if I go to the inventory section of the UK site on Tesla, there's loads of cars in inventory because they just had a ship come in and now they're offloading them. So there's a difference, isn't there, between we've sold a car to a real customer to we've done our production runs. So I think, I reckon their production runs are probably done for the quarter and they've allocated everything. They know where they're going to be ending up, at what ports, what ships, and, you know, and domestically as well. That's not sold out. That's right. That's entirely different.
Martin, can you go back to the Tesla website that you were just on?
I'm on the US site. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
Cool. Yeah.
Can you change the color that you're highlighting things on that website? So go back to where you were.
Custom order?
Yeah, no, go back to the previous page. Drag over some text.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Now you can change the color. Look at that little thing that pops up. What is this?
What is that?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe I can change the color.
Change it to something. You have upgrade colors now? go back to that. We got to see what colors you can change. Yeah, click on the little
mouse over that thing. Hit a color. Yeah. Mouse over the marker.
No, it just highlights it. Oh, okay. Oh, no, this is like a plugin that I installed ages ago. Okay. No, rubbish. Oh, what? I thought you could
change the color that you highlight the text on the plot.
No, that's something that I installed ages ago. Oh,
this is the real hard news everyone's looking for.
Yeah, this is why.
Sorry.
This is why
you're getting too technical on deliveries.
That's my thought, but prove me wrong in the comments because, you know, what do I know?
Okay, well, speaking of Model S Plaid, though, if you ordered one and you were expecting it to go 0-60 in under 2 seconds, apparently Jason Fenske over at Engineering Explained says you may be disappointed. So, Tom, are you willing to bet like a donut or something? Like the Model S Plaid Plus won't do 0-60 in under two seconds? You wrote about this, so I'm picking on you.
The whole article was really basically over an asterisk. We're talking about rollout here, and that's really what Jason went after. And the problem is that, and I agreed with him, which is why I wrote this article. I was very quickly lambasted by the Tesla faithful. I lost like 100 Twitter followers and people were calling me Little Gus for the day.
There we go.
And it's crazy because I love Tesla. I own Tesla, but you know what? If they do something that I don't feel is right, if I think it's wrong, I'm going to write an article about it. You could disagree with me. That's totally fine. Yeah. I'm not, a Tesla hater for crying out loud, but hey, whatever. So the whole gist of this article was that, on Tesla's website, when they show the times, the 0-60 times on their performance vehicles, like the Model 3 Performance, Model Y Performance, the Model S Plaid and Plaid Plus, they use rollout to give you the figure, the 0-60 figure,
which a lot of people do,
but the problem is, there's a couple problems. The problem is they don't with their other cars. So they show you that, okay, the Model 3 dual motor long range goes 0-60 in, 4.1 seconds. But if you get the performance, it does it in 3.1. It's a second faster, but it's not because they tested the performance model using rollout. And when you use rollout, you're really timing the 6 to 60 mile an hour time, because in that first foot, it gets up to about 6 miles an hour. That's totally fine if you want to use that. Just make sure it's clear. You put a little asterisk and you say on the bottom, use with rollout and be consistent across your product line. If Tesla wants to use rollout, I'm totally fine with that. But don't only use it on some vehicles and then only put an asterisk on the product, like the advanced product information page, not on the main page where it shows the times. Rollout's fine. Use rollout all you want. But don't pick and choose what vehicles and then compare them and say, hey, for an extra $10,000, you could shave a second off your 0-60 time. No, you can't. And that's the whole gist of this problem. Be transparent. Be fair. Show it for all the vehicles. Use it if you want, but don't pick the vehicles you want to use it for. Okay, that's my rant.
So rollout is something that they use in drag racing for like over the quarter mile, and it just subtracts like the first foot or something of the vehicles. I'm not even sure why they do that, but they do it. Maybe Kyle?
There's tons of reasons, but it has to do with launching inconsistencies mainly.
Okay. So I'm looking at this, but for 0 to 60, I believe some other, I think Motor Trend was also using rollout for 0 to 60.
Everyone uses rollout.
All the magazines do, and some of the OEMs, not all the OEMs.
Right. So
all of the magazines do, but they clearly state that you know, with rollout, the problem here with Tesla was it wasn't clearly stated, and it was inconsistent. The inconsistent thing is what bothers me. Not even the clearly stated. Oh, it should be clearly stated. But what really bothers me is the inconsistency. They say, okay, this car goes 0 to 60 in this time. This car goes 0 to 60 in this time. You could shave a second off your time if you give us an extra $10,000. But that's not the case. Use it on both or don't use it on any of them. That's how I felt about it.
Does Porsche use a rollout, Kylie?
It's hard to say. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't.
I don't believe they do. And yeah. Here's one of the reasons why. Every magazine that tests Porsche vehicles gets a better 0 to 60 time and a quarter mile time than what Porsche puts out. They always, you know, under promise and over deliver. So I would be willing to bet that Porsche does not use rollout.
I agree. So just for reference, Porsche is very notoriously for years, forever, very underrated. So for Taycan Turbo S, they did their 0 to 60 published numbers on the aero wheels, and then they did their range tests on the 21 inch big wheels.
They like intentionally try to make the
but
vehicle.
Now, so not the 4S, the 4S gained range for 2021, but it didn't. They just put the I think they put the 19s on it. They didn't even put the 18s on. So Porsche is just very conservative, and I love that about them. When you get a 0 to 60 time, let's say on a 911 turbo, it's 2.7 seconds, whatever it is. That's like at the top of Pikes Peak with the worst quality gas, is what you're gonna get. That's your worst case scenario.
So just like the backup for our last story, to our last story for a bit, Frédéric Lambert, ça va bien, is in our comments, and he's just talking about, he's the lead at Electric. So he says the source in question has been consistently right for years as per my reporting history, and we've used his reporting, of course, from the same source without questioning. Well, we don't know for sure what sources you have, if it's the same guy or if you get from different, or if you have different sources in there or if it changes, but it's good to know it's the same source. And
can I bring up something really quick? You guys know Alyssa and my girlfriend. Her mom just bought an ID4. I wanted to hit it around the hour mark when everyone's left. And the reason I bring this up, because she doesn't know how to download an app from the App Store on her iPhone. We were trying to help her to just download PlugShare, and she could not figure it out. And now she's buying an ID4. So this is going to be an exciting story to unfold as to how electric vehicles work for the non-tech savvy. It will be my own, sort of test here to see if she can figure it out.
Okay.
Wow.
But, yeah.
So I just wanted to just back up just again for a second. I just
we're always backing up.
I just wanted to, say to Fred that Martin's not in. Question your journalistic integrity there. He's just, generally standards are, you want to have, as many sources as you can. And so this is one source that's unnamed, which is, you've been pretty accurate in most of the times, with the source. But, it's always good to have more sources. And
just like to hear. Like people watching wouldn't know, because I'm not a journalist. I'm not a trained journalist or a member of the journalistic unions that we have over here. But I've employed plenty of them. It's the only bit of the media that is unionized over here. And there are certain standards that people watching wouldn't know. And that is that like one of those is that you would always try and seek two sources for any story. So if it's ever less than one, you can absolutely go with that and run with the report. And like Fred says, it's someone he's used many times before. I don't know if he made it clear in his article or not that it was the same guy or girl. And Fred is, is always more right than he is wrong. But just if people are reading it, it becomes fact really quickly. And it's the other publications that then run with it. And I've seen it everywhere from like blogs to mainstream media, is that you always need to ensure that where that story comes from, you kind of cascade from an official public or a press release with a quote from somebody who's an employee at the top, and it kind of then cascades down.
Right.
To,
so people tend to build on that sometimes. It's like the game of telephone.
Yeah, just need to be really careful with things sometimes. not questioning anyone's integrity or even the validity of the story, which is, you know, absolutely, you know, super interesting to talk about. And so, just to kind of clarify what I meant, I was trying to explain to the kind of layman watching that, like, there are different strengths of source, as it were. But that's good to know.
I think we should do a cross collab. We should have Fred on, and then one of us should go on their podcast. I think that'd be kind of fun.
I want to know more about, because he bought like a Model X that had done like a zillion miles, and I haven't heard him talk about that in ages, whether he sold it or whether he's still got it. But I love those stories of kind of the real high milers as well, because again, that puts a lot of people who are interested in coming into the world of EVs, it puts their mind at rest, because they think, oh, you know, my mobile phone battery dies after a couple of years. And those kind of stories, like, hey, I bought a car with, you know, 200,000, 300,000 miles. Okay, it might have had a new battery pack at some point from Tesla early on in its life. But, you know, it puts people's mind at rest as well. So, yeah, lots of good storylines to talk about.
Yeah. And thanks for checking in, Fred. I always watch you and Seth's podcast also. You got some good information over there. But we appreciate you checking in on the comments here.
Yeah, I think Seth actually started the website originally, I believe. I got to meet him once in last year or before times.
That's so funny. Fred, go back and watch what we said. It wasn't talking blank, 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 blank.
Oh, no.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah, right.
We can't show that one.
We can't show that, but you can read his comment.
It's a family channel.
Yeah. So let's move on to the next story. I'm kind of most excited about this one because, so some viewers may know that I am really, 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 I really love the Honda Prophecy concept. And it looks like it will be made into a production vehicle in 2022. That's like really soon, like next year. So, and it's going to be called the Ioniq 6. So now Honda has said it wants the various Ioniq cars, and all built on the EGMP platform, to have their own separate character. And as we also saw with how close Hyundai stayed with the 45 concept with the Ioniq 5. So I'm taking all of this as a sign from God that they're really, I'm like,
wow, what kind of show are we on here? This is getting crazy.
I'm practically an atheist, but I'm using the expression. So we're really going to, they're really going to build a car that's very quite similar to this Prophecy concept. It may not have like the suicide doors, and it will have like an actual steering wheel. And if you can show the interior of that actually down below, just to see what they have. And there's some really great pictures in the gallery. The concept has this, like these weird handles instead of a steering wheel. But anyway, I'm hoping that the exterior lines will mostly stay, you know, because I think it's just a beautiful car, and it should go well over 300 miles. We're thinking maybe as many as 400 miles on a charge. It should recharge super quick and accelerate, you know, 0 to 60. And I'm thinking like it'll do 3 seconds.
Are they going to put a steering wheel in it?
Yeah. I mean, they can't have this, whatever that is. I don't even know what that is. It's not even like a tank thing, you know, like a tank steer, you know.
Tesla's concept to the next level.
Right.
Yeah. It's
going to completely think for you, not just the gears. It's going to steer. Just you have to stand there and concentrate on what you want to do. And it'll link to your brain. So
I understand the point of concept vehicles, which is to give the designers something tangible to show to the world, which is the direction they want to take that vehicle or brand's image in the future. I just don't know how we're ever going to have a car in the next 10 years without a steering wheel on sale. Right. So like this concept to me is just totally
It's just a concept. I mean, the interior would be like a normal, we would be hopefully echo some of the outside, you know, styling themes. But I mean, you can see like the inside of the Kia EV6 or the Hyundai Ioniq 5. So it would be in that realm, I would imagine.
Yeah, I'm driving a new Kia this week, by the way, and I don't necessarily want to talk about the car because it's not electric, but just one of the cars on the e-loan. It is very well integrated, very nice, just like every other Hyundai Kia product, even to the point where, and they've been doing this for a couple of years now, when you just walk up to the trunk with your key in the pocket and wait there for a second, it opens for you.
Nice.
It's just really nicely integrated, more so than most people give them credit for. So I can't wait to try some of these new EVs coming out of the South Korean brands, because I think they're just going to be stellar, but who knows?
Right. I had a Kia rental a couple of weeks ago with like 50,000 miles in the clock. wasn't
how many?
50,000.
50,000 on a rental car.
That's been rental car miles. So
it really shows that rental companies are having trouble.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I've never gotten a rental car with that many miles.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was happy that I could even get one. And this all goes back to that chip shortage situation. Mm-hmm. The rental companies can't buy new cars right now.
And the price of used cars, just any of them, they're through the roof now. You don't want to be shopping for a car now.
No.
Right.
Going back to this picture, by the way, just really quickly, can I ask a question? Because you know when Tesla came out with the yoke, and then everyone said, "Oh, that's illegal," and then we said, "Well, we should look into it," and we asked, or you guys over in the US asked your authorities, "Is it legal?" And they were like, "Well, we don't really have any rules against the yoke." Like, at what point are there, like, I go back to when people talk to me about Dieselgate and VW. I can't say they broke any rules because here we didn't write the rules for them to break. So VW didn't break the law here because we didn't have a law for them to break. Yeah. Nobody thought they would do anything as scuzzy as they did. Whereas you were very clever. You actually put the law in place and you're like, you did a very bad thing. You should give us some money now. Mm-hmm. So we like here, I can't say they did anything wrong. So with steering wheels, like how specific are the rules? Like when they actually wrote... Like
there is a rule.
Regulations for the roads in the US. Oh yeah,
there's specific rules about that. Like, the FMVSS code is just like tall, you know, longer than my house is tall.
And so it does mention steering wheel shapes. It has to have like a continuous rim on the outside or something like that. I'm not sure.
And it does. It does have a continuous rim on the outside. The yoke.
So does this. Look, it's got two of them on either hand.
It's so safe.
You'd argue. You would say, look, it's continuous. It goes round and round.
Do the regs say it has to be in front of you though?
Exactly. That's question, right. That's a steering wheel.
We could pull all that up.
So if just going back to the prophecy for a second, I don't know. So I see this as a halo type vehicle. I have the feeling that if they make it, they won't make a lot of them. I think they're going to need their battery supply for the IONIQ 5 and the Kia EV6 and whatever the Genesis version of that crossover vehicle is going to be. So I really want to see this though. And I don't know. Is it anyone else like this thing as much as I do? Or is it just me?
I think it's just you.
Oh,
what? Man. Yeah, because it's a concept. How can you get excited about it?
I mean, the concept 45 that previewed the IONIQ 5 was
yeah, but pretty, then you can start close. Getting excited about it when the IONIQ 5 came out.
Okay,
I think this is silly.
So it's they're going to begin making this next year, so that we should see a production version before too long. Then I think, right?
Yeah, don't get too attached to that design. You're going to see side view mirrors stuck onto it and some other stuff.
But what you know, what is interesting that they've said before is that every IONIQ digit will have its own styling language, and with the best will in the world, I know Elon Musk has said this, and Franz, they're like, no, we approach each car. This is when they launched the Cybertruck. They were like, no, every car has its own, which is nonsense because S3, X, and Y. Have complete design language, about the front and rear and things, you know, buttons and things. So that's going to be really curious. Like if every Hyundai looks different, like they can't replicate the 80s 8-bit styling of the IONIQ 5 forever. So it'll be really weird if all of their cars look wildly different. And we've never
seen anything like it. There always has to be a brand identity.
It's got to be something.
At least there always has been.
I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you can have all your cars looking different and not like your car. But
well, Corvette and Silverado don't look the same.
Yeah, fair enough.
So this will be the last EGMP platform for like a year or so. After the prophecy comes out, there's like a leap year in over at Hyundai, and the next one is going to be the IONIQ 7, and that's going to be like I guess a full size SUV from what I understand.
Yes, that's like a 7-8 seater Model S X. Competitor like a Neo ES8 competitor, yeah.
Or what's the big Palisade? Is that the big Hyundai?
Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, that's the big SUV.
So it'll be like in that range, I imagine, or possibly bigger, maybe. So it'll be interesting to see, but we're going to have to wait a while to see that. So according to a document obtained by a Car and Driver, the Ford F-150 EV is actually going to carry the Lightning name. So when we talk about Ford electric pickup trucks, I think we're going to be talking Ford Lightning, and that was a trim level back in, I think it came out in the early 90s, like 93, I guess. And it's like a sport street truck kind of, you know, just like a trim level. Like, yeah, And now it's going to be their electric trucks. And I don't really have anything more to say about that. I just wanted to get it out there. Anyone wanted to comment on that?
Just to say it would be a shame if they didn't use the Lightning name.
Right. Right on. Okay. And also, we had one more note. I think we're going to end in a decent time today. The Ford has started delivering its Mach-Es in Norway, and they had a Ford Europe put out a little video. I think we have it on our post there.
Yeah.
And it's got a bunch of Mach-Es coming off the ferry over in Norway. So that's great to see. Norway is like a really electric vehicle friendly country. They've got lots of incentives and disincentives for gasoline vehicles. So their EV adoption is ramping quicker than pretty much anybody else's, I believe. So yeah, that's kind of nice to see that.
There was let me find the Twitter post. It'll be in my history. There was a wide shot of all of these. And it's great, isn't it? Whenever you see that many cars, just that's got to be over 1,000 just lined up. Because each one of those is a real person. It's a customer. It's a family. It's someone who's got their new car just days away. And like when you see that photo, you think, that's a lot of happy Norwegians just around the corner. That's a lot of EVs lined up. Great. I think it's all Mach-Es. I mean, they all look like that. I've not stared that closely.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they're Mach-Es, yeah. And it's more gasoline cars off the road and
absolutely
cleaner skies and cleaner cities. Awesome.
Although there in Norway, people are like on their third EVs. You know what I mean? Yeah. These might be replacing an EV, Dom. Like here in the US, nearly everyone that gets an EV, it's their first EV, you know, but you know, over there, they've been doing this for a while. So it might not be replacing a gas car.
They still have a pretty large fleet. It takes a while to replace a whole fleet of vehicles, like a good decade or so.
There certainly are still a lot of gas cars there. I'm just pointing out the fact that, you know, it doesn't, not necessarily all of those are replacing gas cars, where here in the US, I bet, you know, 90%+ of the Mach-Es that go on the road are replacing a gas car.
Good shout. Talking about the Mustang Mach-E though, Dom, because the sales in the US have been in decline since it launched in Jan-Feb. And it looks like it's because obviously supply is at capacity. They'll sell everyone they can make, but that's because over here we have fines based on if you sell too many gas cars. And so it looks like the US is losing out for now. Because they would love to stock dealers with more cars, more examples of colors and specs and trims, but it looks like they're going to ship them over to Europe in 21 just to avoid.
I don't think that's true. Let me take a look. Pull up how many Ford Mustang Mach-Es are sitting on the lot right now in our country, and I'm going to bet it's a lot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, hold on.
They're all coming Mach-E, here. They're all coming miles. Here.
Hold on. This is just on cars.com.
Okay.
There are over 1,000. It doesn't even have a number because it's over 1,000 available Mustang Mach-Es for sale sitting on lots, according to cars.com.
Well, I take that.
And there's like six of them at my local dealer. And originally they, you know, when we were looking at the blue one that EV Dave bought for us to use and for him to use, we went to our local dealer here. We said, hey, great. We'd like to build a media plan around this. We're not asking for anything off sticker. We just want to pay MSRP for the car, what it should be. And they said, oh, great. Yeah, all sounds good. Then the car came in. Oh, it's $5,000 over sticker. We said, you have a nice day. We drove a couple hundred miles down the street and we bought one at $1,000 off. I think we even got a discount. Dave got $1,000 off the car. So dealers are being greedy. I hate it when dealers mark up vehicles over sticker. It's just unethical, but they can make a lot of money, and manufacturers, according to our dealer laws, can't change that. But there are over 1,000. The least expensive is 56,000. Hold on. The least expensive one is 42,554. The most expensive one is $69,500. Someone's charging over. That's a used car, of course. Most of them are in that, you know, again, MSRP range, 63, 64 grand for a Mach-E premium on the high side. Again, over 1,000 of them within just of my, let's just say 50 miles from my house, there's 30 of them.
Wow. Well, that's a good sign, I guess, but not for Ford. There shouldn't be any inventory.
And I mean, obviously there's some amount. There's always going to be some amount of inventory.
Oh, yeah, there'll always be some. People cancel. But this whole thing that, like, they're sold out and you can't get one, anyone can just go and buy one today and drive it home today. Well, do an on-site.
But we'll take all of them that you can send over here.
But the markup that Kyle brought up is hurting sales. I know people in California that want Mach-E's, and in California in particular, the markups are so great that they're just waiting. And I'm like, you know, they're on lots in New Jersey.
Just drive to Arizona.
MSRP.
Drive to Utah. So,
yeah, I know, but not everybody is willing to, you know, drive across country like Kyle is to get a car.
Buy it and ship it.
I know you're 100% right, but a lot of people don't want to go through that. They want to get a local dealer where they deal with, and so in any event, there are people that are waiting that want to buy these cars that are like, you know what, I'm going to wait till the end of the summer or the fall because, you know, it's crazy. There's $5,000 minimum MSRP markup. And it really is where you live. So that's part of it. It's not the whole case, right. But I definitely personally know people that are going to buy one, but they're waiting for the markup to go down in California. Here in New Jersey, you can get them for sticker or less at some deals.
Yeah, you can negotiate a discount on a Mach-E right now. If you call around and you're scrappy, if you know how to buy a car, you can get a couple $100 or maybe even $1,000+ off.
Well, that'd be great because there's not a lot of deals that'd be had because, you know, they don't have cars to sell.
Yeah, they're shipping 4,000 of them in the 2 months of May and June to Norway alone. So it could be that would beat the ID4. It would become Norway's best-selling EV instantly for the year, and probably the best-selling car because it's not a big car market, which is amazing for such a small market like Norway to have 4,000 of them in Ford's order books to arrive over a 2 month period. Literally,
That car works wonderfully for Norway.
Yeah, I mean, great. Because everything is closer together here anyway, so we don't need crazy range on cars.
The range isn't bad, but also because there's so many chargers around Norway, you don't ever have to charge past 80%. That whole cutoff thing for your charging current works. So I think it's good. It's also pretty good in cold weather, the way that it handles its charging when the pack's cold. I did some tests, right on par with Tesla, if not better in some cases, actually.
So that brings us to the end of our show. I'd like to thank you all for joining us. If you have any comments about any of the topics on today's show, you can comment on the Inside EVs podcast post, the YouTube comment section, or on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. And if you're watching us on YouTube, or a rating if you're listening on another platform. Hey, by the way, if you're like a Twitch person, you know, please feel free to stream this on Twitch right now. And we need some people to actually watch us on Twitch so we can go up to our next level. So that would help us out if you're one of those Twitch people. So don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Tom Longley is at Tomalog. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at Out of Spec. I'm at Dominic_Y. Click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.